Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to After Things. I am Andrew Main, joined by Justin Robert Young
and Brian. Hello, everybody.
Brushwood.
Hey, what is going on? So, during the break between Weird Things and After Things, we were talking about Rick and Morty, and I'm sure you've got an angle. I just want to get this off my chest. Which Bryce just watched all of, and then a bunch of people hit me up with the precursors to Rick and Morty. Have you seen any of those?
No, I haven't.
Justin...
In your face, Bryce!
No. Like Justin Roiland, I believe. A bunch of people started tweeting me all of these weird, like... what started off as little vignettes or practice things, and it made me... To be honest, it echoed, like... In a pre-Beavis and Butthead world, you could see Mike Judge short videos of proto-versions of Beavis and Butthead. And you would see characters, you know, in Beavis and Butthead, you see a proto-version of Hank Hill before it comes out. And it's fascinating
Matt
to me.
Matt Groening, too, with his early stuff, too.
What's that say again?
Matt Groening with his early stuff.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Even with, you know, with Life in Hell and so on. It's fascinating to me to trace the lineage of where stuff goes, because early on... Justin's stuff, it's nakedly Doc Brown and Marty McFly from Back to the Future, only they change like the pronunciation of Marty to Mahti, M-A-H-T-I or something like that. But otherwise, they're pretty much the same characters that you see in Rick and Morty. And then you see, I don't know, the evolution on the other side of it, especially I don't know. Just as a starting point, since you know, After Things is all about the creative process, I thought that was an interesting thing to comment on. Is what does it look like to be able to trace the evolution of ideas right there in public through previous iterations on there?
Well, especially now that so much of it is accessible. I mean, you know, we were doing Cord Killers this week, and you were talking about an old Mike Judge cartoon, and you just remembered, you know, these few lines in your head. I Googled it, and it was there on YouTube. So even in a for pre-digital work, you know, that stuff is now, you know, increasingly archived. So not only are we seeing anybody, you know, famously, there's an old sketch I did in college that the Night Attack fans have continued to, you know, show and joke about that, like, you know, and now it's something that like YouTube was available. So we put it up on YouTube when we did it. But even now, everything that, you know, if you put it out and somebody has a copy of it, it's going to go up somewhere on the internet. Like, so not only is everything now being recorded, but everything then is being increasingly archived.
Well, and plus it goes even beyond that, because what'll happen is you'll get meta analysis of all the stuff that was, like, right now there's still an awful lot of content that exists in printed material that hasn't been digitized yet. And even more of that content that hasn't been processed by metacognition, you know, AI bots that evaluate how much of this language is borrowed or inspired by previous works. I mean, soon we're going to see the DNA of famous songs be able to say, like, yes, whoever wrote this definitely saw this prior art, definitely was inspired by this, definitely changed this, and definitely took credit unfairly for this other thing. It's it's like this artistic reckoning that's coming down the pipeline in the future. Kind of like everyone, you know, there's so many crowd shots from, we'll say, 1960s to current day that will be processed, and facial recognition software will be able to say, Bill Clinton definitely attended this rally. He was definitely at this rave. He was definitely
eating a brownie. Yeah, but it's a special brownie.
Exactly. Right. I mean, it's like, I don't know. There's this.
I want to take this on a different tangent to how it applies to creators. And you have something you're passionate about and something you like. And then you think you have it. You think you've nailed it. You think you put it into its final form. Maybe it's a book. Maybe you're an animator in this case, where you've created a little short film or something like that. And then it doesn't hit. It doesn't take off. It kind of doesn't go where you think that you want it to go. And then you move on. And I can think of a case of somebody where they made a little short film. It was funny. People liked it. And then that sort of is the extent of what it did. And they went on and they did two movies, two low budget films, live action stuff, acting and playing other parts of it. And one of them was a musical and was campy and weird, but never got much life. And then that little thing they did 5 years prior caught on. They did another one and that caught on a little bit more. And the next thing you know, they're on Comedy Central making South Park in 1997, when the first time those characters ever appeared was 1992. It goes before Santa Claus versus Jesus. They did like the kids versus Frosty.
Yeah.
5 years before South Park came, they made a little film and then went off to go do Cannibal the Musical and Orgasmo. And and then we get the brilliance that South Park, based on that, those sort of little germs of what they did. And then the notion of doing a musical and telling those stories and taking elements out of a South Park story becomes Book of Mormon.
Yeah.
And
a Tony Award sweeping musical, right?
Incredible. And so it's you don't know where these things will pop up. You know, in the Steve Martin biography, he talked about talking to Johnny Carson and how every little bit you learn, every little bit of business that you pick up later on, you might find yourself using that. And when you have characters, when you have something that's very, very well fleshed out, really well developed, you know, in some books, you know, some authors will take a character, they'll change the name and they'll write another book just using the same person, the same thing. Some people have different ones that have different life of their own, but you don't know where this thing will end. Most often it doesn't go anywhere, but if you're persistent and you're talented, you keep bringing it back into play.
I mean, I guess that's the reason you go for it, is because you don't know. I like, great art oftentimes comes from a place. Great art often comes from a folder that was previously labeled wasted time. Does that make sense? Where it's like you do things and you don't know why you do them, but at some point it becomes incredibly valuable and you're very thrilled that you did. And I don't know why this is occurring to me, but not, you know, being a fan of kung fu movies in high school or whatever, I remember goofing around with a PVC pipe, trying to learn how to twirl it around like I was, you know, fighting people or whatever. But it's like, danged if 20 years later, you can't throw me a shower curtain rod and I can't swing it around like a slightly more impressive version of the Star Wars kid, which is definitely something that'll be worth something in some, you know, domain.com ad that we'll do on Scam School eventually.
There's you want to kind of be a magpie and you want to collect these things and remember in some form. And I do that as a writer now all the time. Somebody made some funny joke, you know, and it was just, timing was perfect, whatever. It was just an opportunity. It was in hanging out there and somebody said this. And I go, that's great. I'm going to use that later on because I'm going to have a character say that, you know, yeah. And I'll take the credit. I was at, you know, over at Popeye's Fried Chicken. I'll explain why I'm there so much now. And, you know, they're two teenagers, guy and a girl. They're maybe 19 years old. And I watch their interactions on their phone as he gets up to go wait in line and she's texting. And then he turns around to her. She's like, seriously? He's like, yeah. And then boom, boom, boom. And I said, this is a very interesting exchange. Half of it's verbal. Half of it's through medium of text. And then there's some dynamic playing out between them and some other friend. There's some other party there. And watching their body language and the way they're dressed, it's like, oh, you're going to end up in a book and one of you is getting murdered. you know, it's you pick these things up and you don't know where they'll play. Sometimes they don't. Sometimes I just make notes of stuff. I go, oh, this is good. I like this. I think this is a really cool point for something. And go do that. Andrew, why are you Popeye's Fried Chicken?
Why are you Popeye's so goddamn much, Andrew?
Well, I'm at Tugo's too. I've been going over there for the sub shop. I've been going there because my normal routine for lunch or for dinner is I hop in my car. I drive for about 10, 15 minutes. I go to my favorite restaurant, Daphne's California Greek Cafe, which is great. Sit there for an hour or so, check the internet, have a very, very leisurely time, then get up and come back here and do whatever I need to do. Well, since I've been trying to finish a book, and my deadline is my birthday, May 25th, I've said, you know what? I need to be more conscious of when I'm wasting time. And one of the things I do is I can say, well, I'm going to go eat. That's not wasting time. Well, that 15 minutes there, that 15 minutes back, can they justify it by spending time there? Like, that's 2 hours, you know? That could be an hour and a half. That could be an hour and a half lunch or so. And for dinner, that could be, you know, longer too. And so I said, you know what? I'm going to go across the street to go. Like, I don't like to eat, like, Subway sandwiches or all the time because of all the bread. But I'm like, you know what? I'll sacrifice my health for this book. So I walk across the street. I eat. I come back. And so I'm saving, you know, hour and a half, 2 hours a day by just trying to do it all locally. And so that's
why. Also, are you writing at your house now? Because I remember for a while you really found the muse at Arby's and McDonald's.
I did do notes today. So I did go today. I'm like, well, I'm not going to try to write today because I got so much going on. I wrote a lot last night, but I said, you know what? What I will do is I need to do outline for the next 10 chapters. So I actually went to the restaurant that I haven't been going to, sat down there with my notepad, and I did a bunch of notes. And so I do notes in places where I'm going to be distracted, but I can sit down and put a few sentences at a time. And so I still do that. I might go to McDonald's tonight or something because I don't know what time I'll go back and they'll be open.
Yeah.
So anyhow, that's my
point. That's one of those things, man. Everybody needs to. I think, you know, your story as an author, I think is really important for anybody who's starting their own journey, because, like, you know, I think there's a lot of romanticism, especially with literature, of like he retreated to his cabin in the woods where he could have true solitude. And it's like, no, like Andrew's career, and I know because I was there at those same places, were at like an Arby's on University and a McDonald's where they had Wi-Fi and you could still do all your research if you needed to look something up. They had your smartphone there, and other than that, it was just banging away and writing and writing and writing.
I would leave my door and I'd go there and I'd sit down and say, I'm not coming back until I have 10 chapters outlined, you know. And that would be like, don't come home until I have that. And sometimes I might get 30 done. Like I've been writing for the last 2 weeks based on one sitting at a restaurant of just, and it's been an idea I've been thinking about for a long time, and then putting down all my notes. Now what I do now is when I'm excited and enthusiastic, I'll write a chapter, and then I go for a walk and I take a break and I say, okay, reset, because I like my things to be tight and move and not to meander in my writing so that people are waiting for me to find my point, you know? So, but anyhow, and because I finished up a writing project before this that took forever and I loved it, but I just had all these, well, do I go here or do I go there? And it's, there's not so much writer's block. There's writers standing in the fork of the road trying to figure out which way to go. And that's the biggest handicap to me. And so here I've been trying to like, no, this is where I'm going. I can add the color to how we get there, but know where I'm going before I sit down, and things have been going really well.
So how much of the, of moving yourself to a different space of saying I can't come home until I've done X, Y, or Z is an attempt to tie the high-minded, goal-oriented, large project part of your brain to the visceral, I'm hungry and cold and tired, I want to go home, so it's like we better produce results part of your existence.
No, because if I'm really uncomfortable, I'm not going to create, you know, it won't work. It's more just, it's focus. It's really about, because the problem is we live in an environment we can have a lot of different things distracting us. When I sat down to start writing, I cleared all the stuff off my desk, by the way. And I've started to accumulate little things now, little decks of cards and rubber bands and stuff, but I cleared everything else. I almost never use Twitter on my desktop, almost never use it. I don't get myself in the position of saying, I can't do this because it's hard. And I think I sent you an article about dieting.
About how it will never work in the long term and you should just give up and accept your fatness.
It was the...
oh, my God. This is so amazing. Just because I know the kind of stuff that Andrew says. I did not get sent this, but I just know this kind of stuff that Andrew says, and I know that what Brian has interpreted it as is in no way what it was.
No, Justin, I'm going to say that I would say that he's largely accurate, and I think that the thing that doesn't get said, in the hard part in that article and the hard part for that person to say, is there are some people who have willpower. There are some people who will make willpower and having willpower their overwhelming, the one thing they drive for and move forwards to, and that's not anybody reading this, you know? Nobody, chances are most people, 99% of the people reading this are not those people. So give up, you know, and it gets into that sort of weird sort of medical advice of like, well, you know, you shouldn't go get your own sort of DNA screening for disease because most of them will be wrong. Yeah. But you know what? If I'm intelligent enough to go get it, I'm intelligent enough to understand that. So basically what the article talks about, that's the biggest problem, right?
Is like whatever variability there is in your DNA, it's largely overshadowed by the noise of whether or not of just everyday life happening all around you.
Yeah. Now what this article makes a point is, and they make a very good point, is they talk about, you know, it's one thing to have willpower in certain things. It's another thing, like if you say I'm dieting and you're in an office and you're in a room and there's donuts and there's a box of donuts, you can say nope and you're fine. 5 minutes later, that goddamn box of donuts is still there.
Yep.
And you can say,
you're having to say,
nope.
And it's not like you're like, oh, well, I already said nope that one time, so that decision's already been made. It's like now you're encountering that trigger again, and you're like, hey, man, let me ask that question, donuts? And you're
and
like,
I told you, like, my solution to that thing is the thing that works best for me is, like, I tell myself I can have anything, but, like, that box, that's great. I'm going to go eat an apple first, and then I can have that donut. And after I eat that apple, I'm like, the donuts so much, you know. I use candy to get myself to the desk.
I get a box of Mike and Ike's. That kind of bargaining all the time. It's like, and unfortunately, usually it's like, are you sure you don't want to write that email? If you do, you can have a beer afterwards. It's like, oh, that'd be really great. All I have to do is write this email. He's like, well, yeah, that and the other thing.
No. Like, I don't say after. Like, I say, like, oh, I want to sit down at my computer. Like, all right. Know what you need to write, open up that mic and I set up there and start writing.
And so, by the way, I used to think that it was a nonsense, self-created construct to do that kind of bargaining with yourself. I thought it was a waste of my time. But really, reading Kahneman's Thinking Fast and Slow made me understand the biological basis behind it, where it's like there are two separate systems of your brain. There is this intuitive lizard brain animal that just instantly thinks it knows things, it feels things, and then there's, you know, the child king ruling that we perceive ourselves as, the language-based thinking brain. And it's not BS that you are having to bargain with yourself, that you're having to plead to please not do this. It's like, come on, bro, you know you're not going to like that. And then it's like, yeah, but I think I'm going to do this anyway. It's like, you will feel terrible about it tomorrow. It's like, yeah, we'll get bent, other me.
And I think that I apply the same thing to writing and to dieting, all these other stuff, is like, I don't tell myself I can't. I don't tell myself I have to write 10,000 words today. Because the stress and the dealing with that leads to one thing is, chances are you will fail. Mm-hmm. And then after you fail, you develop all these tools for rationalizing and reasoning why that was unreasonable for you to do that, why it shouldn't have been that way. And then you give up any kind of goal. I sit down and I look at my calendar and say, man, I got 2 weeks. If I average 5,000 words a day, that's good. I need to adjust. If I can't write all day Sunday, that's fine. I'm not going to try to race and get everything done on Saturday or this or whatever. And if I get most of it done or that's good. But I don't set myself up like, and I tell myself like, I don't feel like writing today. Don't have to write today. That's fine. And then I'll find myself 30 minutes later writing because I'm like, now that the pressure's gone, I'll just write.
And that's go ahead, Justin.
It really is remarkable, like And very often, I think whenever we do these kind of conversations about like what is good and what is bad, it's always so weird because, like, for me, you have to like figure out. It's like the war rig for Furiosa. It's like everyone's got their own little kill switches that like you just need to learn how to hit. And the most productive of us are the best at it. And very often, we change them overnight, and we need to figure out, you know, the new yet slightly different way to figure out how to motivate us. And it's it's one of those things where, like, for the last 6 months, I've kind of felt like, you know, listen, I probably get a little fatter than I want to, and I probably need to get a little more
you put a ring on her finger. She's got a take you no matter what.
She's already signing on, so fatten up. But the one thing is, like, you know, it's like, all right, well, I should probably run. I should probably work out. I mean, I'm in hotels a lot. Hotels got gyms, you know, like I should take advantage of it. And the odd thing was that in my head, I knew I'd eventually do it. I knew I'd eventually start getting into it again because I was into it before. And I don't remember it being like this big, gigantic, the clouds parting and being like, oh, you need to do this. It's just like, it's like anything else. I do a lot. I feel like I got enough willpower that I can achieve goals. It just kind of happens. And it was one of those things where it was literally just like an app. It was just the fact that I had an app and it was as easy as saying like, okay, boop, like, what do I do today? This is what you do. okay, I can do that. And it is 30 minutes of my day. And it was a routine that was supposed to be 3 days a week for a month and a half. And in like 3 weeks, I'm at the end of it because I just started running every day because it was just that easy to kind of get into it. And it was like, it's so hard because it's not like I hadn't tried other similar things before. It was just for whatever reason, I hit the kill switches right this time. And now it's a thing that I do. And when I don't do it, I miss it, as opposed to not doing it and being like, oh, geez, I gotta do this.
I have a theory and an idea, a practice that I don't know if it's right, but is that when it comes to fad diets and exercises, yes, absolutely yes. The key is pick a new one up. Don't wait forever to pick a new one up after you give up on the last one.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, like, do change something. Things up. Like, oh, I'm going to go paleo. That's fine. You know, have the paleo. Yeah, no, then go vegetarian for a while. You know, go ahead, try that. Didn't work? Fine. But just keep doing stuff. If you get a little bit of improvement.
And that's what we find with studies about quitting smoking is that that quitting, trying to quit smoking and failing puts you on a path that is much more likely.
Said that's what we find in studies of quitting smoking. I imagine you in the garage with Penelope and the kids with cigarettes like, all right, let's gonna try this, kids.
Let's give it one more. No. But what we find is that you're better off trying and failing a few times than never trying at all. It's like, yeah that's what success is built on, the bones of previous failures.
Yeah, you gotta, like anything, just the next time you get to the next attempt, the better. And something happens is you might stumble onto something that works, and two, more importantly, you become really good at picking yourself up off the ground and dusting yourself off. Well,
you become better at the chess match between you and the other lizard part of your brain. Is you start to be like, all right, look, I understand this guy, you know, Justin's coming into town, and I might be tempted to go to a pizza joint because that's an easy way. Let's plan around this in advance. Let's figure out how to not fall for that trap. Which, by the way, since you came into town, Justin, I totally have fallen off all of my healthy everything.
Justin.
It was all a total. So you're off. Brian actually had the opposite of the paleo diet. Brian had the herbivore diet where he just ate leaves. It wasn't even like vegan.
It was the aquarian diet. It was just foraging.
It was pretty. I mean, to be honest, it was pretty good. And you know, I'll get back to it. But it was like nothing. Like, I'd sit down and eat 3 pounds of broccoli or 2 pounds of spinach or whatever. And it was good while it lasted. And now it's not.
By the way, for the first time ever, you can't blame me. Normally, I'm the one who wrecks your diet because all we do is just eat barbecue and pizza and stuff. Like, because we apparently are just reliving the time that never happened when we were college roommates.
Oh, whatever. My God. We're chasing that high, right? It's like, we're both 21 again. Yay!
Back to the whole picking yourself up and keep going. I have a friend who's a magician, who's a pretty good magician, a creative guy, who was very close to getting his own TV series. Right, had a lot of things in place, was very close to getting it, and then things fell through. It didn't happen.
I've never heard of anything like that ever happening to anyone in all of Hollywood.
I know. He kind of just sort of walked away from the whole thing of like, well, I guess this isn't for me, and maybe later on. And you know, 6 or 7 years later, he tried something, you know, and I keep thinking like, and I watched from his example, I'm like, well, the key is, you know, if you think this thing's going south, already be on your Mad Max car pivoting into the next vehicle on the pole vault.
Dude,
don't wait, and then don't sit there staring at everything in the world gone wrong and go, well, that sucks. So my policy was like, I would always be pitching. I was always be doing stuff. I got something in the works that was in the works before the last thing I had, because don't stop to go, oh, I thought this was it.
No. First of all, there is that whole idea of there being something that's it is such a perverse lie. And I remember realizing early on in the days of trying to pitch a TV show that it's like, oh, man, I just hope I get that meeting. And then it's like, oh, if I just get that meeting, then I can make the pitch. If I just make the pitch, then I can make the development footage. Oh, but if I make the development footage, then I'm just going to have to wait and worry whether or not they'll pick up a pilot. Oh, finally, the pilot happened. Oh, but now I have to worry about whether or not they're going to air the pilot. And then it's like, oh, they aired the pilot. Oh, now I have to worry about whether or not anybody watched it. How did anybody react to it? Did they like it? Will they pick up a series? Oh, they picked up a series. We got 10 episodes. Well, now finally, I get to wait and worry about whether or not there'll be a second season of this, and how will the second season be perceived, and so on and so on and so on and so on. It's like it never
and
ends.
Sometimes the thing you don't want to happen is the best thing that can happen.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, but, yeah. And that's the thing is you don't know where this stuff leads. Like, it is as complex as your own motivations, right? Like there's so much that kind of goes into it, and who you are on the other side of it is very often not the person that went into it. Your motivations, your ideas, your creativity is often in very different and interesting places. And by the way, for the smarter. And then you look back at yourself or others that are going through similar situations, and you're like, oh, and you almost like cringe at like, oh, geez, you know, I'll tell you what, like, yeah, that's the kind of decision that you make when you're in there. But you're in a different zone.
What kills me now is I talk to people who are going through earlier stages of that, and I'm like, well, here's the thing that if somebody told me pay attention to this, I'd pay attention. And I get the yeah. I'm like, no, really.
What's funny is when people give you the yeah, what they're really saying is what you're describing doesn't match my fantasy for what success looks like. And because it doesn't match my fantasy, it's not what I want to participate in or make happen. And it's like, meanwhile, that is coming from a space of reality and experience and the fact of what it's actually like to go through it.
It is.
I don't blame them. Like, I mean, it's hard. That's really hard. Like, if you just walked up, somebody's going to the beach, and then you say, well, listen, when you get to the library, look behind the Count of Monte Cristo, and you'll find the secret key. What the hell are you talking about? Yeah, whatever. I'm going to the beach. And then you find out that when you go to the beach is closed. There's a haunted mansion right next to it, and you're like, oh, wait, oh, God damn. That's what he was saying. But I'm in the live. Oh, okay. Sure. Like, you have no idea what it is. I mean, you're behind so many different doors and turns and everything that it's like the best you can do is say yeah in the most polite way possible, because like you just don't have the tools or context to know it. And I think the best you can do to give advice to anybody, right? And I'm not saying us giving advice to other people, but you listening right now in any situation, any walk of life that you could give advice to somebody who is not as far along is to be very patient and to expect literally nothing in return.
Oh, dude, if nothing, like to expect that it looks as though they're intentionally doing the opposite of whatever it is you suggested.
Yeah. My one piece of advice I try to impart is follow good advice and weigh the bad advice. You know, because you know, I go to the Magic Castle a couple times a week, and you'll see people there telling other people, oh, you should do this, and this. And most of it's bad advice. And some of that bad advice comes from people who are highly respected, but I go, man, like, yeah, but they're not respected for this piece of advice, and they don't know why they're successful.
Well, and understand, you know, try to be sympathetic to why they're giving you that advice, because at some level, oftentimes, they're giving you that advice because they want to convince themselves that they are on the right path. And the only way to do that is to give that advice to other people. And then when that person doesn't say that was good advice, they're like, oh, good. That's what I was seeking, was validation that this is the right path I'm on.
Again, and exactly. And we get in defensive mode, and it's very easy to go, well, that person, that's bad advice because it doesn't fit. And we will, not being aware that, no, there was a lot of truth there, but because it doesn't conform, as you pointed, to what we want to see, we ignore it. I get this all the time, you know, and I from people who like to immune themselves from criticisms, like, oh, they don't get it. Maybe they don't. But if you hear it from a couple different places, and there are different places, it's worth paying attention to. But like, weigh the bad advice. Understand it, because sometimes you don't know. If you can immediately tell good from bad, then you don't need advice at all. But I'm one of these people like, man, like James Patterson or somebody who's accomplished or sold something says, you know, the few times in life where I've asked people for advice and they've given me advice, it has helped me immensely. And I've tried to put it into place, and I was not dismissive of it, you know. And I've had very positive interactions with people on Twitter all the time. People get like, give me a piece of advice, give me this. And people tend to be very accepting of that, you know. It's the people that know you that often won't.
Here's
Justin.
Just kidding, no. Yeah. Well, I mean, and it makes sense why. And I know we're coming up on Justin's heart out here, but it's like, it seems to me that people think that it's that there are tactics and moves that make for success.
They want a secret spell, Brian. They want the secret spell.
But that's fine. That's fine. But they're wrong. What they want are habits and algorithms that will lead to success, right? And it's like, you want to know my unpleasant advice that I give to everyone? Is people are like, hey, how do I... People write me, they're like, there is blank wrong with my ability to perform. How do I fix it? And what they want is they want a one move that will fix blank. But the problem is I know they'll be back next week with another blank that's broken in some other way. And it's like, so it's like, I don't do that. I give them the very painful advice of freaking just perform and be bad a lot and keep doing it. And then whatever advice you will discover a much better fix. The 15th time that someone spits in your face, you'll come up with the perfect rejoinder to respond to someone who spits in your face the 15th time they spit in your face. So get out there and get your face spit on a lot.
The only thing I would add to that, though, is I am around a lot of performers, Brian, that have been doing it for years and are no better in the year 20 than they were in year one. And my thing is, like any experiment, you need to have a way to analyze what you've experienced. You need to be able to stop and go, where am I? Because I know there are performers here who are like, oh, so-and-so's really good. And I like what he says. Yeah, it took him 20 years to develop that 8 minutes. I don't think I'd take his advice.
Well, yeah. And you got to do it with your eyes open. And you know, there is a emotional element to production. And if you remain scared to look objectively at where you are and what you're doing, like that to me, that's the biggest thing that I've seen in both my friends and in other people that I followed. That's what changes. That's what a veteran is. That's what, you know, that's what the understanding is really your own mind's ability to say, okay, well, this is good. This is bad. I should do this. Like, you know, this sucks. This seems work. This is where I can recognize this is where my ego is bubbling up and maybe I need to tamp it back down, or this is where I'm being too passive and I need to show a little bit more of, you know, like to illustrate that I know what's going on and this other person doesn't. Like that emotional element, that's it. I learned more about success and dedication in the 4 years that I was working with Andrew, you know, in terms of just understanding what trying to do something is, what dedication to that project is, and what it is when it blows up in your face, and what that, you know, and when what it means to go back and do it again, you know, what it means to the next day to say, yeah, okay, and we keep going, and like that. I look back at those lessons all the time when I see, you know, I look at my own stuff.
Lay awake at night shuddering.
and that's something that you can't teach. You really can't. You know, you can suggest it to people, but everyone's got a different path to it. Everyone's got different aptitude to it. I mean, I'd be inclined to say that some people's brain chemical makeup makes it more difficult or easier for them to wrap their head around. But if you can't see, man, you can't learn. And that's really what it is just being able to see what's in front of you.
Oof. That is the most difficult leap that virtually nobody does, is understand that there's no such thing as failure or success. There's just data. And it's like, if you can make that decision to depart the conscious part of your brain from the meat part of it, and to look and say, this is feedback, this is information, what can I take from this, how can I learn? Again, algorithms, not, you know, fix it spells.
Yeah, you know, pick yourself up, make a map where you've been, you know, look, go, why didn't this work? And don't let your immediate answer be, oh, random, oh, they didn't get out of this. Those things could be valid and true, but if those are the first answers you look for, you'll stop at those answers and you won't pursue the deeper truth.
Do not confuse excuses for reasons. Reasons are you know, likely helpful things. Excuses are comfortable, you know, half-truths you tell yourself. Mm-hmm. So quit being such a failure, other you.
Failure!
How's it been?
It's been after.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.